in Essaouira, in this fishing village. And this old Moroccan tzaddik, she's sitting there playing with her beads. She's saying whatever she's saying there. So I said hello to her, asked her what the story was. I also used to live in Essaouira at a certain point in history, I felt. And I asked her, and she said her father and grandfather were like beadles, were took care of the cemetery in Mogador. And her Eltzeder was Nur Chaim HaGadol. And she, like, said, they made, like, the great-great-grandfather made tea, you know, used to boil the water, whatever. And my daughter took a picture from up top, and she said to me later, showed me the picture, she said, this looks so authentic. She's like, it looks so authentic. Mash authentic, that's what she said. Then you know why it looks authentic? Because it is, right? It was because it is. You can't fake that. Because it is. So when I was reading, like, the book was so good, it's so real, because it's you speaking your own personal experience and bringing beautiful sources from Torah and from all these different wise people. That specific nugget resonated, not in theory, but it resonated very practically, meaning, like, I don't know, I feel like, you know, if every marriage is made up of a million different marriages, so, like, yes, I just started a new one. I was just when I was reading it that I was reading it Leil Shabbos, I'm like, oh, right. Yesterday we had a good one for a walk and had a, opened up something, and whatever that specific point opened up a new channel of us kind of appreciating the way that we handled something. And I felt like, wow, that was like a, you know, that was something new. That was walking through a new door. I felt like, you know, a way that we kind of saw each other. We've known each other 23 years. Been on that walk. We've gone around Dolev more than a few times, but there was something there that was new, and I shared that nugget, and my wife said very beautifully, she's like, it's not just a marriage is made up of a million marriages, but everything is made up of a million everything, because the whole world is constantly moving, and we're constantly changing, and we're developing all the time, and everyone we meet, even though we've seen each other 1,000 times. You're different since the last time we saw each other, right?
A little bit.
Right?
Yeah.
Not just because you're married. Since you got married 2 months ago, right, you changed 100 times already. Meaning we're constantly moving and everything is in a state of flux and change. And there's a sliding state of yichud, of connectivity. And the sooner that we are able to accept that and not just accept it, but like celebrate that, then you just become unstuck from old paradigms and unstuck from old stuckness and unstuck from old mud that we get stuck in. And we're able to like be renewed and appreciate the new opportunities that's happening every moment and every day. And especially when you're dealing with, especially when it's not just in our own head, or not just with chevra, or it's not just with, you know, somebody that we're doing business with or somebody that we're living next door to, but the closest relationship, the most intimate relationship, which is really, the Zohar says, plagufa, you know, the other side of myself, as soon as we're able to recognize that, like, this is not just, like, one algorithm, like, one, you know, the same exact thing that worked then has to work now, and the same terms of connection that worked then have to work now, but things look different when you're 46 than when you're 22, and they should. Things look different when you're 24 from when you're 22, and they should. And framing it as this is a new, like a new relationship, like a new opportunity, was something that I thought was very beautiful, resonated very much.
Thank you.
Very much.
So the idea of the book in general is to take these ideas from the world of marriage therapy and the psychology and science of relationships, and then kind of apply them over to developing a relationship with Hashem. So the idea in the book with that piece of the every marriage made up of a million relationships, which is true in marriage and it's true in the way that you were just talking about. So the idea that I'm developing there is applying that to the relationship with God. And so that our relationship with God, with Hashem, should also be made up of a million relationships that evolve over time. So curious how that plays out also in that context.
So we're changing all the time. But this is the part here. Who did you work with at Mosaica? If we're going to have it, just we're going to talk. Who did you work with at Mosaica? Daron, Rav Daron?
Daron, but there was an editor. This is publishing a book takes so long. By the time it comes out, it's like, did I even write this? I don't know. But so it's so long ago, I don't remember his name.
It sounds like you. You feel you're in it.
There was an editor. I can't remember his name now.
And there's still still spelling mistakes.
There's spelling mistakes too. If Tzadok says, if Tzadik, it's like,
but that's good, because that's like the halacha that you have to, that a woman has to leave off one piece of jewelry, and you leave a little piece of meat on the plate, and you leave an amal unpainted for the churban. Nothing's perfect.
Yeah.
Only Hashem is perfect. There was a teacher, my daughter had a teacher that wouldn't give 100 on the test. He said, only Hashem is perfect. I'm like, come on. I mean, he's got it right. Okay, but anyways.
The Chovas Levavos was actually really the guiding, the permission I felt to write a book that I knew would have so many mistakes is the Chovas Levavos writes, that he was very nervous to write the Sefer because he knew he was going to make mistakes. And he said it's very important that a person not be overly cautious about making mistakes. Because if you're so overly cautious about making mistakes, you're not going to put anything out ever. And so just write it. And he said that about himself. So
I started volume two. I started volume two, three, four, five already. I have but there are all these documents that are all disjointed. Let's see what happens. But there's a maisa. It's a digression, but there's a maisa from, I think it was the Leshen. The Rebbe Yashiv. The Leshem Shavov Achlama. The Leshem wrote this world-changing book, perspective-shifting Sefer on Kabbalah, on mysticism, and put himself into the book. But anyways, he heard years after the book came out, that the Ben Ish Chai was an admirer of the book. He liked the book very, very much. And he was taken away, couldn't believe it. Ben Ish Chai. So Ben Ish Chai like gave feedback at a certain point or something where it got to him. They said that the Ben Ish Chai said this over. The Ben Ish Chai said that he was so pained when he heard the feedback to Rebbe Yashiv, what Rebbe Yashiv's response was. Because the Leshem said, if I only would have known that someone like the Ben Ish Chai would appreciate my Sefer, I could have written three more. I had more to put out, but I didn't know if it was going to go, if it was going to sound right, if it was going to be Mekubal or whatever, how many people would come to the event or whatever. But he didn't know. So Ben Ish Chai says how important it is to fargin another person, that if you like what they say, if they say you heard something good, go over and tell them. My own eyes, I saw in downstairs in Belfer, my second year at YU, there was a night, they had a little unit, some program, a Truva something or other, and they had the girls bust up from Stern, and Rabbi Torsky and Rabbi Schechter spoke. And after Rabbi Schechter spoke, I was standing on the side, and I saw some girl walk up to the front, and Rebbetzin Schechter was there, and she kind of stood there, and Rabbi Schechter turned, and she said, I just wanted to say thank you, she was wonderful, and Rabbi Schechter was so taken aback. It got like he was moved. He's like, thank you, that means so much. And he turns to his wife and he said, he introduced them, like I said, he wanted her to hear the feedback also, you know. It takes a little vulnerability to put yourself out there, especially in such a personal way that you did. And you have to believe in it. It's a real thing. So I say like this, we're constantly changing, right? We're in a constant state of change. When you're changing and you're moving, so things happen in that process. Just being in the world, you get bumped and bruised and whatever, you change and whatever. But the Ribbono Shel Olam is also changing. Meaning, everything's like Hashem is, God is kind of like, he's over here and he's doing his thing, and Ha Yehovah V'yeh, and God is infinitely. But that's not true. There's a way that Hashem is also in a certain sense. This is where I was asking about Mosaic, because they were like, whoa, hold on a second. Okay. I tried to write this in the book, and they were like, this took a little bit back and forth in order to get them to be okay with writing this. Because it's hard to say without it sounding like Kierdik. But Kierdik is good. People like that. It sells books. Keeps people interested.
Can I say something quickly on that?
I'll die.
There's a chapter in here that's called Is God Too Perfect? Which is about this. And the original title of it was actually a little more kathiridic, which maybe would have been better, but I decided not to go with it. It was originally titled Is God a Narcissist? And I asked Rav Asher Weitz for Haskama for the book, and he told the intermediary, the shliach that I sent to ask him for that scum, he told him, tell the author not to change anything. It has to be exactly the way it is. You should say that title, but I can't put a haskam on a book that says it's got a narcissist. So it's a
to get my rabbi didn't write me haskamah, so it's fine.
So the thing that's a shame is that I changed it and I still didn't get the haskamah. So
no, but it's you could say.
But I could say the Torah Shabbat Peh.
Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Peh.
Juicy behind the scenes stuff.
Also, you know it yourself. It doesn't matter if it's in the book. Yeah. Kavod matters. But I was like, if I don't have a haskamah for my rabbi, I don't want anybody. He told me, speak to Moshe Weiss. Moshe Weiss, speak to rabbis from YU. It'll stop. I'm like, nope. Either you or no one. Ride or die. So I was like, okay, good luck. So there's a notion, the Medrash says that the Ribono Shel Olam appeared to Klal Yisrael at Yam Suf like a Gibor Chayim, like a young warrior, a strong warrior. And at Har Sinai, God, so to speak, Keviyachol appears, you could say anything you want, if they say Keviyachol, appears at Mount Sinai like a Zakein Malei Rachamim or Malei Chachma, like a wise old man, so to speak. Meaning there's different ways, different parts of him, different aspects of the way Ribono Shel Olam, so to speak, presenting himself in the life of a Jew. Right? There's a God who's El Melech Yoshev Al Kisei Rachamim, and then there's also Kel Kanav and Okev. And there's different elements of different gods. Ribono Shel Olam also is, so to speak, changing the way that he presents to us, the way that Kodesh Baruch Hu is iterating in our lives, or the way that we're interpreting God's presence in our lives. If it's true with in a relationship, then it's true with Hashem. That's, I think, the yisod that I took from Yibra. Is that if it's true, if the mashal is true, the nimshal is true. If the nimshal is true, the mashal is true. If it's true with a person's wife, if this is the term of Shir HaShirim, if this is the portal through which the Baal Shem Tov says Ahavas Yisrael, Avtarecha Kamocha, is the portal through which we reach Ahavas Hashem, then it's the most true when it comes to one's significant other, one's partner. The most true. And just like I'm changing, she's also changing. I mean, we're both kind of in a state of movement, you know? And that happens with maturity, that happens with life, that happens with learning more, that happens with getting older, that happens with your hormones, that happens with your physical expression of the world, that happens with your job, that happens with your neighborhood. Meaning everything is constantly changing. It happens with different stages. Children, God willing, they're changing, so we have to change in order to be here. Everything is in a constant state of flux. I'm changing all the time, she's changing all the time, everything around us is changing all the time. The entire world is. Faster that we begin to understand, we allow ourselves the awareness that the Ribono Shel Olam also expects us to change the way we're with him. He's saying this, doing the same shtick he did in Shana Aleph. You're already your second year in college. Something's wrong. It's not meant to be that way. You have class, you have finals, you have dating, you have ball, you have chevra, you're home with your parents, not in a dormitory with a bunch of guys. V'chein hala at every single stage of life. Not meant to be the same. Every relationship, if every marriage is made up of a million different marriages, then every real relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam is made up of a million different stages and expressions, and that's the most natural, healthy, true. It's a reality. Nachal Noveh Mekor Chachma, the constant state of flowing. If anything that's alive is changing and moving, you can never step into the river in the same place twice. The river's changing and I'm changing. Did I mention you should buy this book? It's phenomenal. No.
I think one of the ways to think about also, in addition to the changing, because I think one way, and I think that like philosophically this is important for thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in terms of like that kfiridik piece here, is because the reason there's a million marriages within one marriage, or there's a million everything within everything, like your wife said, is because actually it's all contained already within it. So it's not actually changing. It's just which element of it is on the surface, right? Which part of it is kind of presenting itself, but it's really all already there. So a person is just endlessly deep and endlessly mysterious. And there's always more to potentially learn about them. Adam Olam Katan, who a person's an entire world within themselves, and obviously God is endlessly infinite, and there's so that which is revealing itself in a moment is not a fundamental change. It's a piece of what's kind of portraying or showing itself, what color is coming out in this moment, but it's all the mystery that's contained within. It's like the Svarim say of like, how could there be an aspect of Torah called Sisrei Torah, right? The secrets of Torah, right? What does it mean for it to be a secret? If it's a secret because it's like information, so you tell it over, it's not a secret anymore. And all the secrets of Sisrei Torah, of the secret elements of Torah, are in Svarim, like they're written in books. So how is it called a secret? It's not a secret anymore. It's right there. Go open the book and learn it. But the idea is because it's a type of wisdom, it's a type of information that the more that you know it, the more you realize that it's actually a secret. The more that it's revealed, the more secretive it becomes. It's like the Gemara in Pesachim says, L'machase Atik, that the Pasuk in Daniel says that we praise the person who conceals that which is old, concealing that which is old. And the first opinion says, what's that referring to? It's referring to somebody who actually hides the information, actually conceals, simple, kapshuto. You have a piece of information, you put a covering over it, nobody could see it. But the second opinion says that machase atik, the concealing, actually refers to somebody who reveals it. But how is it revealing a concealment? The pasuk says we're praising the person who conceals, and the Gemara says it's referring to the person who reveals it. How could the revealing be referring to the concealing? Because when it comes to Hashem, as Rabbi Nachman says, and the Rashba already says, in the Svarim Kadmonim, tachlis ha'idiyah she'yedah she'yedah, right? The ultimate knowledge is knowing that we can't know. It's the type of knowledge that the more that you reveal it, the more you understand that you don't know anything about it, right? And I think the idea within the marriage context and within the relationship with Hashem is to always be able to look at the other person and see that there's still a secret there. No matter how well I know you, there's still something about you that I don't know. And no matter how well I know myself, there's still something I don't know about myself. And that really opens up and cultivates a curiosity that allows a relationship to still have a dynamic, youthful kind of spirit to it, even if people have been married or in a relationship or have been doing Avodas Hashem for who knows how long. But there's still something mysterious. There's still something new, something yet unknown.
And it'll always be like that.
And it'll always be like that, no matter how much.
It'll always be, and it's good. It's good. I mean, we'll never be able to know everything about ourselves or the other, and we're not meant to.
Right.
The way that Soloveitchik writes this, the way that we can understand that is through our Sedra, the building of the Mishkan and the Kelim of the Mishkan. When you talk about the halachas of Tomantara, the way that a person is able to access God presence in the Mishkan or in the Mikdash, so there's certain parts that you can go to and certain parts that we can't. There's certain parts in certain states and certain situations of Tuma and Tahara, men, women, Jew, Gentile, have certain parts that they could access. But no matter how far into the Azara, the Kodesh, you can go, there's still something called the Kodesh HaKadashim. And it becomes more exclusive or more intimate and more set aside and more hidden, more concealed and more private and more special as you get more inside. And then you get to that place called Kodesh HaKadashim, which is beyond measure. The Gemara talks, there's no measurement. It's beyond proportion. It's beyond space and beyond size. And there in the Aron are the Luchos Shvuros together with the Luchos Shnios. And that's not opened. That stays closed. That even the Kohen Gadol on the highest day and the holiest day and the biggest time is able to go into that place called Holy of Holies, still there's something that's not opened. There's a place even outside ourselves that our spouse will never know. And that's okay. No matter how much we could learn each other, no matter how much we could share and be open and share and share and share, there's still a part of me that remains inside of there. You know what happens if you open up that Aron? Made as a lost ark. Everybody's face melts off. The whole place turns upside down. And what you're alluding to is kipshuto, the way Hashem sets up that specific spot, that coordinate of concealment, of hiddenness, of recognizing that no matter how deep I go, no matter how much we reveal of ourselves and each other, no matter how beautiful and wonderful it could be, no matter how open and vulnerable and honest and intimate, there's still something there which will be beyond our reach and beyond measure and beyond working. No matter how many years and no matter how many lifetimes together, necessarily there's a place there called Ein Sof, and that's where the Kruvim, those childlike that angelic figures are looking down and looking at each other, saying, we stay fresh and we stay young and we stay new, we're able to get remarried again and again and again and be childlike and tap into tmimus again and newness again and fall in love again and start again and believe in each other and ourselves again, because we know that we're never, ever, ever going to get there. We're never going to ever fully know. And that's the most beautiful thing in the entire world. That world, like you mentioned, the mystery of intrigue, of concealment. And that's awesome. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam. I mean, there is where we find God. Ahavta l'reacha kamocha, zeh klal gadol b'Torah. All of Torah rests on that. L'reacha kamocha. There's no more greater opportunity, no greater challenge than with one significant other. There's also no greater entryway to the world of Yichud Hashem than that spot.
So shifting over to a slightly different piece, we were talking until now, I think, about kind of knowing another person. One of the other pieces of relationships is experiencing the experience of being known by the other person, right? So relationships are made up of knowing and being known, this process of knowing and being known, which I like to think about in our relationship with Hashem as being Torah and Tefillah, right? Essentially, Torah is knowing Hashem and Tefillah is being known by Hashem. And the idea or the practice of the Inyan, the Avodah of Hispodidus, that's everywhere, but especially emphasized in Rabbi Nachman, it really expands the idea of being known by Hashem, because the davening isn't just from a sitter, isn't just the text that's given to us, but it's speaking, as Rabbi Nachman says, Kedaber Ishel Re'eh, which is speaking like to a friend, speaking in a normal, informal relationship, just talking. So what I want to ask you is, on a personal level, I feel that I can, and I feel that I can do a pretty good job at being conscious of Hashem in my life, of like living in a state of, like Hashem is with me, and I'm in like a relationship. I'm kind of in an ongoing, unspoken dialogue. But I'm not good. I have a very hard time at actually doing what Rabbi Nachman says to do, of like setting time aside and actually speaking it out. Like the actual Maisa Dibor, you know, the speaking it. I think I live in a pretty connected state of an unspoken dialogue.
Yeah, you're a heady person.
But like the actual speaking is very hard.
You have to read attached.
So that's what I want to ask you. I do have to read attached. I talk a lot in attached about doing this, but I'm not good at it at all. And I'm curious what you, because I don't think I'm alone.
Somebody asked me, why did you write a book about Tshuva? I'm like, do you know me? It's like, you know, they say, choose the gangster life, but the gangster life chose me. And they're like, it's aspirational. And I was
right.
Like, I'm writing a book about something that I'm working through. I'm like trying to, in a constant state of trying to like do Tshuva. So first of all, it's okay. Meaning that's normal. Many people put their feelings and their thoughts and their aspirations into the world, and that's beautiful. The more honest we are about it, the ready. His vote of this is really, I mean, for me, it was probably the single most critical variable in like a shift. Because I remember I was in this building in YU in the most desperate times. Did not like walking down this block in the winter, you know.
Whole-hearted broken dreams.
Whatever, exactly. Like walking up from Dumbrov in the middle of morning Seder, you know, like waiting like to get the look from Rabbi Simon, from he's going to put his glasses on his forehead and smile at me at 10:30 in the morning, you know, like coming up with my fresh tefillin lines up from Dumbrov, towel around my neck, you know, holding a through fire and water. And that was really the time I started doing this boat of this. Was walking up the hill from Dunbrook to YU, just saying, God, I hate this. Get me out of here. Anna Racha, he says in there's a footnote in there that Reb Nosson would go to the Bug River and scream out, Anna Racha im Hatzel Oshia, and I was like walking, you know, up the... It was before the Rise Up campaign. It was a different YU, it was a different time. It was a different time for us. But I remember like sitting there like, my God, you know, pluck me out of here. Like, take me by my pace and get me out of this place. And I remember the feeling. I remember that feeling of talking, of saying it. Not just feeling it, but like I remember how good it felt. As I was panting up the hill from saying it out, just repeating it. And then hearing on a tape from Rav David Zeller, of blessed memory, chant, Ribono Shel Olam, and chanting Ribono Shel Olam, saying it, not just thinking Hashem, but saying Ribono Shel Olam over and over. He said, Ribono Shel Olam, Ribono Shel Olam, Ribono Shel Olam. And he did it with breath work. And it wasn't called breath work or mindfulness then. I had this tape and I listened to it 10,000 times around these parts here. And in the cloisters, I walked to the cloisters. Chevra still go to cloisters? I walked to cloisters, buy malt liquor in the place, and walk to cloisters and just walk up and down the street saying Ribono Shel Olam 1,000 times. And I remember how real it was when I stopped doing that. Meaning like, I got married, like for some reason just fell out of that practice because kind of had like, okay, I made it, I got married, whatever it was. Like I didn't have to, you know, be desperate anymore or like cry. And then years later, and continued learning the books and getting the content and getting the ideas. I remember years later, many years later, I met my Rebbe and his insistence. You can see on a person if they're being mitbodeh and talking to Hashem or not. You can see it in their face. There's some tzaddikim who can see, did you put on tefillin? Some tzaddikim, they can look at you, a high school boy, and say, you need to work on Kedusha and learn more Gemara. Some tzaddikim, he said, you can see on a person's face how they feel if they haven't spoken to Hashem that day. And we're reintroducing it from a different place in life, not from a desperation, get me out of here, save me, you know, but from a conversational point of just a relationship. Nachon, to your example, you can love your wife very much, or your spouse very, very much, and appreciate them very much, and be proud of them, and trust them, and feel good with them. But if you don't say it, you can even do the dishes or whatever love language and buy a watch and do, use every other love language in the world or pat them on the back. You can do whatever. But if you don't say it, then it remains in the world of the potential. It's unactualized. Dibor is davar. It creates a thing. And at a certain, better, at a different stage of life, I was 22 until the time it was probably 12 years, 13 years, 14 years in the middle of not really doing that practice, coming, re-entering it. I remember working through, thinking about where I was when I was doing it, coming from a place of proactivity and positivity and opening up. It was such a different feeling, and the only way to do it is just to do it.
Why is it so hard? It's like I start and I just feel so stupid. It's like it's just very hard.
I don't want to say about you, I can tell you what with me. If I really sense Ribono Shel Olam is with me. For the first part of it, sometimes it's hard because we think it has to be a certain way. You're so spiesen. that messes everybody up because you think it has to be like that. To go to a forest and have a bench and do this with my hands and then, you know, and have a vazaloze. You don't have to do that. You could just be walking to the makola. We could be after wrapping your tefillin. Instead of saying, say the yom, or whatever, you know, I'm not saying don't say the tefillin, but after you said the yom, or whatever, or say the Torah, or whatever you're doing there, and the tefillah saman, and whatever other stuff there, then the nun psukim, to like, continue the conversation for 30 seconds. We get stuck there. Enough, the Rabbeinu says it'll be an hour, and you have to go outside of the yishuv, so if I can't go to the cloisters for an hour, so then, if I can't get to the gym and do my hour with the trainer, then I shouldn't drop and do 20 push-ups, you know, before I go to bed. Okay, it's not true. It's not true. It's not a zero-sum game. Every little bit is good. And like, I shouldn't do 15 crunches, you know, before I take a shower at night because I didn't do my whole, you know, five rounds of HIIT or whatever it is. You can't go to classes for an hour, which most of us don't find the opportunity to do. The Baron Hashem cut over the things that are easy, like help me with this test. You know, Baruch Shalom, let there be a lot of people who come to this event. Baruch Shalom, let me make a lot of money in this stock. Let this date go well. Let her think I'm cool. I don't know. Help me get through this daf at 2.0, you know, while it's on 1.0. I don't know, whatever. Everybody with their thing that they're davening for, you know. Whatever. Everybody with their... And talk about the things that are easy to talk about. And just become accustomed to, like, mepatpet, like, drop a little diburim here, putting my kids to sleep. I talk to Hashem. The easiest way for me to talk to Hashem is after I put my kids into bed. I stop for a second by the mezuzah of the room. I just, for a minute, not even a minute, a few seconds, I just... Just help these kids be happy. Let them know how much we love them. Let them feel good about themselves. My daughter goes out on a date, and I said, Baruch Shalom, let her just, whatever this is, let her just know how special. You know, the things that are, those are easy. And then it's easy about my wife also. Let her be healthy and well and happy and good. Even if it's like ATM kind of things. Like, even if it's just going there and trying to make withdrawals from the Baruch Shalom, and that's like, let's say, this level down here. Okay, but then you get accustomed to it. And I make myself a lunch, make cracking eggs. Say, Baruch Shalom, let me make good choices. Oh, let me believe that I'm making good choices now to be healthy and well. Let there not be a spot in this. Meaning just to talk, to talk, to talk, to talk, to talk, to talk. I go to Osher, I went to Osher Ad last week. You don't go to Osher Ad? It's a desperation station, not a place. I haven't gone in a while. But I went to Osher Ad. And it was action. There was action there. They already put out all the Purim stuff. I walked down and said, I just walked down the aisle and I said, Baruch Shalom, let the Jewish people have everything they need. Let people have whatever they need. Let them be able to afford good, healthy food without going into debt, with having shefa. Meaning there's every opportunity to talk to Hashem, to make it a prayerful experience. And then from there you get, it normalizes it. It normalizes it. And it's not, and then it becomes, you know the America's Daf Yomi, Stefanski? Rabbi Stefanski? Good morning, Rabbosai. Ah! No? You don't have that in America? Everybody has it. Good morning, Vietnam. He starts off his thing every day. Good morning, Rabbosai. Ah! Say good morning to Ribbono Shel Olam. After Moda'ani. Like after you mumble through whatever. Or after you go to, not to Bigas, but after you go to the bathroom. And it goes. And you say, rip an Asher Yatzar, you go through an Asher Yatzar fast or whatever, say, thank you Hashem that it worked. That was good. Thank you Hashem. Meaning to say in those words, become accustomed to being given praise, giving thanks, asking for help, expressing appreciation. It normalizes it. And then once it's attached to an activity or to a desire, to a want, or to something aspirational, you have those points of contact throughout the day. We make 100 brachas a day, so to speak, you know, but it could be that every one of those things, we didn't even think for a second who I'm talking to. But if we add here and there an appreciation, a request, it normalizes the whole way of being with Hashem. And then it's not weird to like sit down and eat something instead of flipping through the phone for a second. I sit there and as I'm eating lunch, I'd say a couple things. Okay, no, not bad so far, so good today. Making it through. No, it sounds crazy. Everybody's walking around. Just put an earbud in and walk around down the street and talk. It sounds like a curb bit, but like sit there and at the table and have a conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not so crazy. You just have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to do it.
So there's one very important attachment that I left out of the book. I really want to know what you would say about it. So I talk about different attachments, just a psychological word they use for relationships. They just want to sound a little more fancy, so they came up with a little more of a technical sounding word, attachment. Attachment theory was supposed to be called love theory, really, but they just thought they'd get laughed out of the scientific world, so they called it something that sounded a little better, attachment theory. Attachment means relationship. So in the book, I talk about different essential relationships, about friendships, about parent-child relationships, and most significantly, I talk about marriage, and then ultimately, the point being the attachment relationship we have with Hashem. There's one essential attachment that I left out consciously because I didn't know how to talk about it because to me it's so much, But that's the attachment to a Rebbe, like having that relationship with a Rebbe. And it's come up already in the conversation. You've brought up your Rebbe. I think you mean Rav Kluger. You've talked about how I've had the opportunity to meet a number of times, had incredible experiences meeting with him. And it's an essential attachment. It's my relationship with Rav Weinberger, and I don't know what to call it. My relationship with Rav Itchemeyer, whatever it is exactly, there's two of the most important attachments that I have. But I didn't know how to capture it. I didn't know how to write about it. But I'm curious how you talk
Shlomo
about
Melech
it.
Because Rav Hillel Paritcher, who was attached to three generations of tzaddikim, of rebbes, of the Lubavitch rebbes, said that if Shlomo Melech would have written Shir HaShirim after the Baal Shem Tov, he would have written it not as a mashal nimshal between a husband and wife, but between a chassid and a rebbe. Meaning it's a world of yichud. For certain people. People. And I always craved that and wanted that so badly. So bad. And I read through Fire and Water my first semester at YU about Rav Nosson's life, and I was just in a million ways yearning for that and looking around and davening over it. And for one reason or another, I never didn't have that. Part of it is I just didn't want to be mevatel myself. I wasn't ready for that. Part of it wasn't the right time, the right place. There's a Netflix series. There's three seasons of Netflix series about the time and place and the way the Siyata D'Shmaya and the luck and the privilege of meeting my Rebbe and having that kesher. I don't totally. It's beyond Tam V'Das for me. I don't totally get why and how I have that. I think that's kind of the way it goes. I go every Erev Shabbos either myself or I take a couple of our little kids. The boys, this past every Shabbos, I went with my future son-in-law and our two sons together. I thought my face was going to melt. I'm doing this 11 years already, 12 years. It's a real thing, and it's very hard to put into words. It's the relationship between a person and a Rebbe is yisod to malchus, yisod tzadik b'shev ne'elam. It's built into creation of the sun and the moon. It's built into the way that Hashem made the world of giving and receiving, and it's part of that same algorithm of yichud between a husband and wife, between a mashpi and a makabel, between God and the universe. And don't think that it has to happen now. Don't think that it has to happen with someone who's alive. Don't think that it has to happen in the way that you see somebody else having that experience. The Alter Rebbe said, put himself into Sefer Tani because it just became untenable for him to spend time with every person. It's just untenable. I was in somebody's house today, this morning. We had a Sichas Chaverim, we learned the Chabura, a Purim, somebody that I was with in Rashid 18, 19, 20 years ago, remember at this point? A person in his 40s, the family, he has a picture of Rav Melech Biederman in his house. It's Rebbe. He was once in the same room with him at the same time. It's his Rebbe. He's with him every single Shabbos, and every day in the WhatsApps, and every single week, and every story, and every bar, top, bottom, of the Wellsprings. He's in it. It's his Rebbe. He doesn't talk about where to send his kid to school, doesn't send him about whether he should go here, go there. Doesn't speak to them about whether he should invest in this nursing home or that nursing home. It's his Rebbe, Kipshutam. It's his Mashpia. He is connected to him in Levi Nefesh Pasha. And he asked him who his other Rebbe is? Levi Smerditcher. Kedush Levi. Day of his life doesn't go by without something to do with the Kedush Levi for the past 20 years. He's Levi, the son Levi Yitzchak. He's a big Tar Heels fan. He's busy with the Berditcher for all time. He buys anything he could find, old Berditcher Svarim, Ksav Yad, this from Berditcher, that. He's Lev Nefesh of Berditcher and Reb Melech. What? And he's a Rav Yishul, who he's very close to. And a couple times a year he calls his Rebbe from Shonabet to wish him good Yontif, good Shabbos, and touch with him, like whatever. And he's very happy and very fulfilled. Those are the itch that we have, that need to be filled. It doesn't have to be Not everybody's going to have access to Avichamar Morgenstern. When Rabbi Yaakov Haber, the publisher of our books, nice to say that, no?
Yeah.
We're noted authors. Rabbi Yaakov Haber, when his son schlepped him to meet the Ravitcher Meyer 7-8 years ago, I remember Rabbi Haber, he said to me, I said, what was it like? He said it was kind of like, like I imagine meeting, like being in the same room as the Arizal. It's just like this overwhelming light and just chaotic sense of like holiness and whatever. I'm like, and I can't go near it. I can't be in the same, I can't go near it. I don't want the swarm. I had swarm, I gave them away. It's not for me. Meaning the sun shines to the moon and the right, you know, and the mashpia is to the makabel and he's tzadik ador, when it's tzadik yador. And that's beautiful. And so was Reb Steinman, so was Reb Chaim Kinevsky, and so was Lubavitcher Rebbe, and so was Reb Yoilish, and so was this, and so was that. Meaning, Rekola tzadikim amitim, when we say, Harini mekasher asatz, we bind ourselves to all the tzadikim of the generation, and all the tzadikim shochnei afar, all the ones who are living, and all the ones who are in the next world, can scratch the itch and the need for mentorship and connectivity and yichud by opening up a Sefer Tanya and having a private, intimate interaction with the Alter Rebbe. That's what he said. Putting myself into this book. Giving myself over to you. Here is a way for us to be bound in Lev and Nefesh. You can go to the Ohel, you can read the Mamorim, you can read the Sichas, you can watch the Fabrangans, you can go on Gem, you can be Makusher to the Rebbe in Lev and Nefesh. You can go to Beit HaRav Kook and sit there. My wife and I sometimes go, we have a chance to go to Shalayim. We went last week, it was my wife's birthday, we went for a night to Shalayim. We went out to eat at in the town by Harvey's, and went to Beit HaRav Kook and sat down, bought a little Arak lemonade, sat down in the back of Beit HaRav Kook just to be there, to take from the Wi-Fi of that tzaddik, to kind of get the connectivity, the hashpos, that's called having a Rebbe and learning the Torah and learning the Nagunim or attaching to things. There are people here walking around connected to the Rav. Whatever your Besorah is, whatever your itch, however you scratch that itch, you can find it. And if you have a person who is able to help with Hadracha a little bit further down the road, a Rav or a Rebbetzin or a person, a mentor, an older sibling, an older friend, somebody who can help, you know, think through and talk through things, matam manoi. But don't think that you have to have a, you know, be able to, you know, be able to sit and have coffee together with, I don't know, whoever it is you're looking to, with Mayor Tversky 3 times a week. It doesn't have to be that way. It could just be by having that, the kesher, in other words, there's no specific way that kesher, it's like eating a Reese's. There's no specific way that kesher has to happen. As long as in some way we're bound to some higher version, some bigger picture, of a yid, I feel like you're able to achieve that. Did that answer the question at all, or did I totally avoid it?
No, answered it. It's speaking about things that are kfiridic. It's funny how I think I can actually talk about and articulate, I think, to some degree, what it means to like have a relationship with Hashem. It's almost more difficult to articulate what it means to have a relationship with the Rebbe. It's like it's interesting.
Vayaminu b'Adonai uva Moshe avdo.
Yeah,
I didn't say it. It's not a new thing. You know, that's another thing. There's a reason why Moshe Rabbeinu was buried in Har Nevo, which we don't know where it is. One of the Rishonim says because it would just be like we would turn that place into a Pushkinah. Yeah. It would be wild. Imagine the shakedown would go on by Moshe Rabbeinu's tzion, Zayin Adar this week.
Yeah.
Right, imagine. Because we know it's tzaddikim.
For me, on a personal level, I was actually like, I was into Hasidus, but I got into Hasidus through Pshisva, which like was like in some way through the quest for authenticity, it was like they had like a different Indian of the Rebbe. They were a little more
I used to learn when I learned Nomeli Melech, and every time it came to part about the tzaddik, I'd skip it. It's like too weird.
Yeah, so I couldn't.
I'm like, what's going on?
I was against it. I was like, this is like, it's like takes away people's individuality, and like I didn't like it. And then it just changed because someone, Zev Kahana, was like, you gotta go. We were in Gruss, and Zev Kahana's like, you gotta go to this Ravitcher Meyer. It's like he like looks at pictures in the middle of davening, and you can like, he's like, I don't know what's happening. Like people are walking in and like cast, it's like crazy stuff.
Manalakur.
Yeah, who knows? Like, so I went once, and I just couldn't leave.
There's another frequency. The tzaddikim are operating on another frequency. Yeah. The last few years, I've tapped into a world of the Abuchatzeris. So I went with my daughter to Morocco. It's a different operating system. There's a different tether. It was like, you can get content, that you can surf the web at 4G, 2G, 3G. This is like, you know, a different, like 770G. You're able to like, in other words, like there's no, here it's no, here you type it in, you click enter, and information from there comes here. In other words, there's no separation between here and what's taking place over there, right? So that's 4G. But imagine if it's at 770G. Or imagine if it's at 1000G. I'm on volume 7 now of Mais and Nisim about the Abuchatzeris. Every Shabbos meal, I'm telling a story about the Mais, about the Abuchatzeris for years now. It's nuts! No, our entire house is like upside down from these. From this. Like my daughter and I went on the Hilul of Rabbi Yitzchak Abuchatzera. I'm like going to Ramla, to the Baba Chaki's care. Meaning like, there's a whole universe, and it's different than anything that any of us were, most of us were raised with, except for Michael Weinblatt, who's on the same. I'm literally, I mean, we've matzasi as the Shava Nafshi. Like we're, I'm like found my soulmate, my soul brother with the Abu Chatzeris.
Yeah, yeah.
Meaning it's unbelievable. No, but there's this universe. There's a universe of like just peel behind the layer of like the way that we're doing things, the way we're doing our mitzvos and our tefillah and our day to day. And there's like this whole split screen narrative of like, whoa, there's a whole other thing going on. Like the pshat is the remez and the drash and the sod, and there's a whole other thing behind that, and that's also taking place right now. And with the Abuchatzeris, it involved arak and like sheep, and like wild. But it's unbelievable. I read these stories not to escape,
right?
Not as a running away from doing the inner working, right. Not from running away from confronting the reality of my own, but just to know that there's just like there's this world out there. There's just a big picture. The Ribono Shel Olam is so vast, and these tzaddikim are operating on just like a totally different plane. And even if on my day to day Tuesday mincha, that's not where I am, or my day to day is just not knowing that that's there. That there is like this whole world of light, and just a world of beyond, a world of infinite possibility and potential. To me, is very powerful. It makes me feel big.
Yeah, I couldn't leave, and all my questions and my whole like analysis of like the Indian side, like all just dissolved like, in a second.
Right. That so just, like, I asked about Blau. Like, I asked about Yosef Blau. This is how clueless I was. I got to YU and I was reading all these books, and Mashkiach, although these books are like you know, Rabbi Krohn stories, whatever it was Shnhalv. I got to YU and I'm like, oh, I want to go find the Mashkiach. And that's why Blau, my second or third night at YU, a question Lakuta Maran. Because I was learning Kutta Maran, you know, at night, and I didn't understand it. So what do you ask? You ask the Mashkiach, or you ask one of the rabbis. I looked around here, like went to Rabbi Har. I went around the base of Midrash to all different rabbis, and each one like kind of said like, I don't know, we don't really do that, whatever it was. And then okay, and like a few days later, I was learning something. It was Thursday night, my first Thursday night at YU. It was like late Thursday night, learning Noam Ali Melech of the Parsha, and the whole thing about the Tzaddik. And again, walking around, looking at Mars. Finally, Rabbi Blau said, maybe speak to Zevi Reichman. You know, he might be probably, you know. So I went to Zev and he went, shh, very special. This is very special. You know? So I'm like, each of these pieces of the tzaddik just gets more bizarre, more sexual, and more weird, and more yisod. Like, what is that? What is going on here? Like, what is, you know, and I'm like, the feeling I got is like, this is not what we do. It's not what we do. And we do fire and water, and you're like, but wait. Then I read about Rabbi Futterfass, and I'm like, but wait. There is such a thing as Mesiras Nefesh for a relationship with this tzaddik that you might not have ever met. There is such a thing, but it's a little bit awkward. And I don't know exactly how it's supposed to go, and I don't know how to put words to it. It feels a little bit. The answer is yeah. The answer is yes. Somewhere between those two places, a person could find themselves. It requires a lot of tefillah, a lot of humility, and a lot of siyat teshmaya. And at the right time, in the right way, something will click. You might not know where it comes from. And I could just say, one humble piece of advice is just be open. Just be open. You have no idea when, like what Wi-Fi you'll pick up. Like where, you know, you keep the thing open. You never know which frequency you'll pick up and where you'll be able to get that content and contact download. And who it's going to be. You don't know what part of the world and what part of Klal Yisrael, from this community, from that community. You mean someone was alive or someone was alive in the next world. And as long as a person's open and yearning for it and asking for it from Hashem, b'dibur, not just in their heart. So Bezrat Hashem, the right time, the right way, we get attached. And I'm going to say one, if you don't mind. Reading attached, it's written in real language. It's written in language, like the language that that we've heard thrown around, like psychology or therapeutic language, or like language that's in the world, that's out there today. We don't really know exactly how to connect with it and how to contextualize it as a yid. This book takes a major step in the direction of like being mityashev all these different opportunities and all these different ideas in a very, very practical way. In a very practical way. I would suggest, I read it through one time to I knew we were gonna get together, but I left it home, my wife already started reading it. And I said, there's a few things there I'd love for us to talk about. It's that type of a book that you can really open up conversations with friends and with chevra. It puts a lot of things on the table, and I think that's a major credit to you.
Thank you.
A certain brave and courageous, honest way of opening up some of these real questions that all of us are, in some way or another, are stuck on. Ashrecha that you brought this out into the world.
Thank you
for doing that.
Maybe I could just finish the conversation with one piece that I think brings it together. Is a small ha'ara I've always liked, that the Gemara says that Im dome rabcha le malach Hashem tzvako, something along those lines, right? If you're the Rebbe resembles the face of an angel, of a malach, then yivakish Torah mipihu, so you should seek out Torah from their mouth. So the implication being that if they don't resemble a malach, so then you shouldn't, right? You shouldn't seek it out. But we know that chachma b'gayim tamin, we know that we can take wisdom from many, many places. So I've always thought the pshat is that it's not saying you should only seek out wisdom, you should only hear the words if the person is domel malach Hashem tzvakos, but it's that you should only be mevakish mipihu if it's domel malach Hashem tzvakos. So the wisdom, the content itself, that you should take good content from anywhere you can find it. Take good insights and wisdom from, it could be from anybody. But the mipihu, the piece of being connected to the person, like wanting it from their mouth, from the relationship, from the attachment to the person. So that's only when they're doma l'malach Hashem tzvakos. And it's just, all the things we were just talking about are that, right? It's about finding wisdom. Wisdom is not hard to find. There's so much information out there. There's so much insightful information and good information from a million different sources, but finding the people that you want to sit down and actually talk face to face with, that's really what life is really about. And for me, like I started out by saying, this trip was intentionally meant. I came, this is my last thing. This is, I think, the 11th or 12th thing that I've done in about 4.5 days. And since Wednesday night, I was averaging like 2 to 3 things a day. And I was really intentionally starting out with sharing the book, sharing ideas, and it shifted over to being about Mipihu. It shifted over to being about connecting with the people that I really want to connect with, and I cannot think of a better landing spot for the ending for me than sitting with you. I appreciate it so much, and Rav Judah has been a person that I've always wanted. I wanted the connection to be Mipihu, not just the wisdom. So thank you.
Are.
Thank you, Evan, for coming.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Shkayach.
The grasa is Piyu, slash 101. Mm-hmm. Which is one. Amalek says, Amal Kuf. Amalek is Amal Kuf. That 100 first times, Ada Doma, 100
right,
times.
Right.
That's the grasa is Piyu.
Right.
Yeah. That's you get the real kiss.
And the way that you want to do it again, even after 100 times, is because of the relationship.
Because you're there with the person.
Because you're with the person. So I don't know the information already, but I want to be the person. Exactly.
Do it again with you.
Yeah.
Very good.
Mazel tov. 2 hours. My grandfather used to say, it's an old man. And he said that by the Asian man, Shamsi Masa, right? So we can talk in court. So say that it's talking to man. So you and me make it. Meaning he'll change.
Yeah.
Meaning he'll change.
Very good. Yeah. Very nice.
The other thing I said, I'd like to...
Oh, that Hashem will change, you're saying.
No, I meant man will change himself.
Right.
And man will make himself. Will change himself. The other thing is, I always tell my bio class, cells that you have today and proteins that you have today and other ones that you had before, yesterday, is everything inside of you is changing.
Wow.
So there's a connection between the Olam HaZeh.
They're great. Thank you. Michelle, I told this to your daughter.
Recording?
Oh, I don't know.
Who knows? Maybe people want to...